Forget about it. If you've ever seen a Robert De Niro film, you've probably heard that expression. According to the Urban Dictionary, forget about it is an East Coast interpretation of the expression forget about it. Forget about it means the issue is not worth the time, the energy, the mental effort, or the emotional resources. This morning I suggest that forget about it is also an essential component of our calling from Jesus. Our calling to be generous in offering forgiveness. Back around Easter, Plain Dealer sports writer, columnist, and author Terry Pluto wrote about a friend's struggle with forgiveness. Here's what Pluto wrote in part. Many of us go through periods in our lives where we can't forgive someone else, or we can't forgive ourselves, or often it's both. He says, we're feeling the life squeezed out of us because of forgiveness issues. He goes on, there are several aspects of forgiveness. It's not the same as reconciliation, where a relationship is completely restored. After all, it's not wise to have close contact with some dangerous or vile people. But he goes on, but we can also forgive them with the power of God so that we don't obsess over how they have hurt us. For their actions don't define us as people. But boy, doesn't it take the power of God to be able to forgive sometimes. I mean, sometimes the hurt is so personal, or it's so disappointing, or injurious, or common and repetitious. Of course, sometimes what needs to happen first is not forgiveness, but reporting. If someone is abusing you, perhaps, or you're hurting yourself or someone else, you don't accept it. You report it to someone trustworthy. But when we're offended or slighted, sometimes we have trouble seeing through or around or beyond the offense. We have trouble being able to envision a possibility for forgiveness to take its place. We must request and grant forgiveness almost every day of our lives. Most of the offenses are trivial and unintentional. Forgiveness becomes problematic only when the trespasses are more serious, when they are intentional, and especially when they are repeated. The parable of the unforgiving servant, which you just heard from Matthew chapter 18, describes a king who relents to show amazing mercy to a servant. Now, this servant was not some powerless pauper. In the ancient Near East, high officials in service to a king were called servants. So this high official has embezzled a staggering amount of tax revenue, more than he could ever repay in his lifetime. And so the king had ordered the official and his family to be sold into slavery, supposedly so that he could repay the debt. But practically, it was punishment. He couldn't have repaid it. When the official begged for mercy, the king was moved to forgive the debt and declined even to prosecute the official. But then, as you heard in the story, the official with that new lease on life seeks out a colleague who owed the official a paltry amount. The official had that co-worker thrown into debtor's prison. And other officials saw what the pardoned colleague had done to a fellow official. They reported that to the king, who pronounced a sentence of life imprisonment on the unforgiving servant. Now, Jesus told this story in response to support his shocking response to a question asked by the apostle Peter about the limits of forgiveness. Peter had asked, "If my brother keeps on sinning against me, how many times do I have to forgive him?" And Peter probably shocked his fellow disciples when he proposed an unreasonably high number. Should I forgive him 7 times? Can you believe it? No, Jesus responded, not 7 times. We can almost picture the disciples nodding with self-satisfaction, knowing that they would be viewed as exemplary if they forgave someone twice, maybe many 3 times. No, not 7 times, Jesus said, but 77 times, or 70 times 7, more on that in a minute. And in our imaginations, we can hear the disciples' jaws hit the dusty ground. And as I said, actually, it might have been a bigger deal than that. In the oldest copies of Matthew's Gospel, the scholars have been able to study, the number that Jesus says in his response to Peter, it isn't clear in the Greek language. We can't tell for sure if he told Peter he should be prepared to forgive someone 77 times, or is it 70 times 7? The Greek isn't clear. Either way, it's a big number. Imagine someone offending you, hurting you, and you decide to forgive them for their fleeting moment of insensitivity or selfishness or maybe intentional meanness. After a few days or weeks, they hurt you again, and you forgive them a second time. And then sometime later, a third. And a fourth, and then a tenth, and then a 25th time. And by now, you're probably losing track of how many times you've dug deep into your reservoir of grace and call on God's Holy Spirit to strengthen you to forgive yet again. That would be true the 50th time. It would be true the 77th time, the 490th time. And by the way, where did those numbers come from anyway? Why did Peter ask about forgiving 7 times? And why did Jesus respond with 77 times or more? Well, we have to go back to the Old Testament. Actually, this part of the Old Testament probably reflected a folklore tradition that was already ancient when it was used as the basis for part of the Old Testament scriptures. We all know that the primordial genealogy in the book of Genesis was based on a prototypical man and woman named and thing. Good. And we know that they had 2 sons. Anybody know the names of the sons? Cain and... Oh, you're good. You're rolling today. Now, you may remember from Genesis chapter 4 that sibling jealousy arose in Cain's heart, and he killed his brother. God's punishment for that offense was to evict Cain from the family farm, forced him to scrounge for a living. And with that pronounced punishment, Cain panicked. He said to God, "People will be out to get me because of what I did to my brother." And God assured him, "No, this will deter them. If anyone kills you, 7 lives will be taken in revenge. I'm not sure quite how reassuring that was, but the story continues. Eventually, Adam and Eve's son Cain got a wife, though the Bible never explains how she came into existence. A few generations later, Cain's great-great-great-grandson was born. His name was Lamech. Not a popular name. Apparently, Lamech had some of his great-great-great-grandfather Cain in him, because one time when some guy picked a fight with Lamech and he gave him a punch, Lamech killed the guy. Far from being remorseful, Lamech declared to his wives, he said, if people were going to pay with 7 lives if they had killed great-great-great-grandpa Cain, they're going to pay with 77 lives if they kill me. That's what Lamech said. In other words, in the family of the undisciplined murderer, Lamech, vengeance ran rampant, uncontrolled, and without limits. Not just 7 lives to avenge the death, but 77 lives. A blood feud without mercy or limit. Now, that story from the Old Testament would have come to mind immediately when Jesus answered Peter, no, not 7 times, but 77 times. But Jesus turned that story upside down. Where Lamech promised immeasurable retribution for an offense, Jesus urged innumerable efforts at mercy and forgiveness. The point, of course, is that we should forgive with such generosity that we can't keep track. In a beautiful passage in the 31st chapter of his book, the prophet Jeremiah revealed God's vision for a new way for people to relate to each other. It began with God, with God's infinite mercy and love. Indeed, God would model this infinite love and mercy, promising in a verse that appears in the cover of your bulletin, I will forgive their sins, and I will no longer remember their wrongs. I, the Lord, have spoken. Did you hear that? Forgiving sins and what? No longer remembering wrongs. They went hand in hand. A seminary president named Martin Copenhaver has written, quote, in my experience, when someone says, I will forgive, but I will never forget, it usually means I will never forgive. By never forgetting, we're choosing to hold on to the pain that we associate with the wrong done to us. Choosing not to forget is like picking at a scab. Though the injury has already begun to heal, we return to the scene of the injury and voluntarily initiate the painful process yet again. In the old comic strip Kudzu, one of the recurring characters was an old-time southern country preacher, a fellow with the name the Reverend Will B. Dunn. That's him on the front cover of your bulletin. In that strip depicted there, the Reverend Will B. Dunn appears to be engaged in some marriage counseling. We can imagine that the wife and husband both have unloaded their cargo of complaints about each other to the good preacher. They probably recounted each one in extreme detail. So clear were the specifics from the husband and wife having flung them at each other over and over for months, even years. And the preacher's advice seems like a cartoonist's attempt simply to have fun with the English language. Reverend Dunn tells the couple sometimes a good forgettery is more valuable than a good memory. But let me go back to that seminary president's thoughts on forgetting as a component of forgiving. Dr. Copenhaver wrote, in his masterpiece called City of God, written in the year 413, St. Augustine says that when we are redeemed in the world to come, we will still remember our own wrongdoing, but in a different way than we remember in this life. In this life, we cannot remember our own wrongdoing without being pained by it. In the world to come, we will be able to recall events without remembering the pain associated with them. There will be this kind of forgetfulness. To be redeemed, then, is in some way to be spared the pain that can accompany recollection. To forgive, something like forgetfulness is required. We're not expected to erase every memory of hurt or injustice from our cerebral hard drives. Rather, we are to forgive so completely that it is as if we have forgotten. He goes on to say, philosopher Søren Kierkegaard observed that forgetting is the opposite of creating. In creating, you make something out of nothing. In forgetting, you make nothing out of nothing. He says that choosing to forget hurt and injustice suffered at the hands of another is like taking something and putting it behind your back. Oh, it's still there. And if you were asked about it, you'd have to grant that it exists, but you don't look at it. It's not between you. It's behind you. Now, I admit that it's pretty hard to imagine the expression, forget about it, coming from the lips of Jesus. I've never seen that translation. But as hard as it can be, forgetting is a necessary component of being able to forgive, to give up to God the hurts and injuries that are going to arise from our interactions with Him. Jesus said that being generous in forgiveness is a distinctive characteristic of those who follow Him. Being able to forgive generously is a distinctive characteristic of those who follow Him. In being generous forgivers, we're not stronger or better than other folks. Rather, we realize that whatever we are called to forgive is minute compared to the forgiveness that God has shown toward us in the sacrifice and the resurrection of Jesus the Son. Would you bow with me in prayer? Oh God, help me to remember to forgive. And in so doing, to forget.